Welcome back to another episode of Safe Space, the ABA podcast. I'm your host, Michelle Zeman, and tonight I'm super excited to bring this really awesome guest to talk a little bit about sleep, all things sleep, something that I feel like everybody in this field has been told about a few times in their career, at least a few times in their career. But that being said, I'm super excited for me to introduce Lisa Vertullo. She is a certified behavioral sleep specialist. Just so you guys are aware, this is not in conjunction or association with the Behavior Analyst Certification Board, but this is her title as a certified behavioral sleep specialist. Lisa, I'm so excited to have you on the podcast. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Well, let's just dive right into it. You know, I'm super excited to talk about sleep. I'm super excited to hear about like what you do. So first, tell us how you got started as a sleep specialist.
Sure. So I'm a district-wide behavior consultant for a school district in New York, and I develop, FBAs and behavior plans. And a lot of times what comes up when we're working with students with some challenging behaviors and high needs, it comes back to sleep. You know, Billy's been up since 3 a.m. You know, parents will write us a note or drop the student off. So sorry, Billy's been up late. You know, and it increases, you know, their behavior and also decreases their like ability to attend. So we always incorporated some type of sleep strategy into our behavior plans. However, I digging in deeper and deeper, because I did have one student who I just couldn't meet his needs. I found a certification program that really just opened the floodgates for me in it. And it was just so eye-opening and so many things that I didn't realize that we can put into place. And so I took the course, and the course is fabulous. The instructor stays on forever as a mentor. So whenever there's something that comes up that I'm not really sure about, I'll run it by her, and it's been a great, great experience.
That is so beautiful. I mean, you know, and it's interesting because we as behavior analysts really want to make sure that we look at ruling out medical issues, ruling out things like sleep. One of the things that I will often tell my technicians is to ask those questions of, you know, how did you sleep last night, or how did your child sleep last night? And I can definitely see how sleep can really correlate with behavior as a whole. It's really just quite interesting, to say the least.
Yes. And it's something that parents don't really like to talk about. It's something that I've learned. And really diving into the sleep assessments and the sleep, it's not something that they really want to fully indulge in until they realize all the work that's going to go into it during the day, and that we're here to support you. And it's not, you know, anything that they're not doing. It's something that we could all do together as a team and start the process during the day.
Right. So, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and I wonder too, because I know that, you know, some families will say like, oh, you know, I don't like to talk too much about this, but, you know, there are some issues with sleep. I wonder what the, like, you know, because there's definitely a lot of stigma behind it. But for those of us who don't really understand what that stigma is, what do you think that is, just from your perspective?
So one of the things is co-sleeping. Some families are a little embarrassed by it. However, that's not something that we actually discourage. If that's your family's belief, and that's your family's culture, and many families co-sleep as families, or you co-sleep with your child, that's fine. And we work our plan around that. And then I've had other parents who they really take it so personally, because like that's their time with their kids, or their, you know, young adults. I work with a lot of adolescents and young adults, and setting everything up, it doesn't have to be perfect, and it doesn't have to be a daunting task. It can be something that everybody can enjoy, and it's a calming, soothing process eventually.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I can only imagine because I've definitely heard about like the co-sleeping thing. And I say that like as a thing because some families have, expressed some shame behind that. And it's like, I'm not here to judge your lifestyle. I'm not here to judge your culture. When we're being culturally competent, we aren't being judgmental of your practices when we're not here, So I think it's definitely really interesting to hear that too.
And it also helps that it's virtual, because I'm not in their sleep space.
Yes.
I'm like, don't worry, I'm not going to be in your bedroom or, and in your sleep space, we could do this, unless you need me to be, of course, but we could do this through Zoom.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I can only imagine how invasive it might be to be in their sleep space.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. One of the things I get really curious about too is, of course, when we're looking at not just like our clients and not just their sleep, but medical issues. That's the first thing that we have to do as a BCBA is I have to make sure that, when I'm looking at evaluating behaviors and evaluating my client, that I'm ruling out those medical issues. So how do you approach ruling out those medical issues that could potentially affect their sleep?
Right. So if it goes beyond, do you have a bedtime routine and they just need some simple strategies of putting a bedtime routine together and that works, then great. We just needed some consistency. Other than that, the first thing they need to do is set a doctor's appointment and rule out any medical condition at all. And once we get the okay, then we'll move forward. And there have been students that we sent to the doctor and then went for a sleep study and wound up coming back with sleep apnea.
Sleep apnea is definitely a big concern. I know I personally have some sleep apnea myself, and I don't know if that's necessarily associated with me being autistic or if it has to do with weight, because I've heard of both things kind of associating with each other. How do you differentiate between that medical sleep issue, like sleep apnea, and behavioral sleep challenges?
So once we get the clearance from the doctor, or they do get a diagnosis of sleep apnea, then we work with that. So if what usually happens is if they get a diagnosis of sleep apnea, we'll work on desensitizing to the mask. And we'll do that during the day, so it's not paired with this situation that we have to put the mask on before we go to bed, and it brings up the anxiety, and we do all the desensitization pairing with reinforcers to get the sleep mask on, and we practice. It's a very slow process, and we do this with communication with either the parents, and then they reply it to the doctor, and then we'll take data. Or sometimes I've been very lucky in the district that I work in is that the families and their doctors are just so willing to speak to us. I just have
That's amazing.
really lucked out.
That's amazing.
There's been, I'll get back to that in a second. But so once that is all done and they're wearing the mask, and if they're sleeping through the night at that point, then it's not a problem unless it's a problem. If there are still sleep issues after that, then we'll include the behavioral strategies.
Interesting, interesting. So you guys first start with that like desensitization to the mask. And do you have it where like the student might try like different masks to do desensitization with, or is it typically just one mask that they are provided with?
So that depends on different masks, but the doctor does that first in the sleep clinic. So if they're a mouth breather, then they'll have a certain type of mask, or if they're breathing through their nose, it's a different type of mask. So the doctor does do that in the clinic. And then once that type of mask is determined, they'll actually give us a few to see which one they'll tolerate more or better.
Interesting. Have you found one mask that has been like the most successful for a client to use amongst all the sleep masks, or does it pretty much vary between client?
It varies between clients.
Okay.
We seem to
Okay.
have a lot of mouth breathers, so usually I see that more often, but it does really depend on the client. And many times we'll still have to go back in and apply the behavioral strategies as well.
Okay. So tell me a little bit about like the behavioral strategies that you end up applying. You know, let's just say like, you know, medical, we've already like done what we can medically speaking. Now let's dive into the behavioral aspect of it. Like, what are some of the things that you've worked on as you know, you working on the behavior strategies?
So I'm just going to go back to the medical piece. I did forget one part. Sometimes medication plays into sleep issues. So, and again, I've been very lucky. I've been able to attend doctor's appointments with my students, or we've had team meetings on the phone or Zoom. So, but a parent will take data for, you know, are there nighttime awakenings? Are they waking too early? What does their sleep latency look like? And then we'll bring that data to the doctor and let's just say the student's on a stimulant. So we'll bring the data to the doctor and say, you know what, they're staying up late. Is there any way that we can adjust? What do you think? Well, actually, this is what we say. What do you think about adjusting the timing? So we leave it up to the doctor, and the doctor will set up a schedule flow increments to adjust the timing if the student is up too late. If the student is drowsy in the morning, I have a student who takes medication in the morning before school and then falls asleep for the first 2 hours in the morning. So we had to, you know, again, take data, meet with the doctor and get that dosage changed and the timing changed. So that's again, another medical part. And then other strategies, it depends on the student and the situation. So we have students who, this is something that I learned in my course. I always thought, let's run it out. Make yourself exhausted, and then you're going to fall asleep. Great. That is absolutely not true. You should not do any activity at least an hour and a half before bedtime. Like, no jumping up and down, no running, no on the trampoline, fast swinging, things like that. It should be more... like if you can teach stretching or yoga posing, if it's like a slow glide or a slow swing, like slow motion, that's okay. So we have to signal the body that it's ready to go to sleep. So that's
You know, it's interesting you say that about like the run it out method. That's something that I've heard a lot. Where it's like, oh, we have to make the kid really tired. We got to take them for walks. We got to take them for, you know, a run or an exercise or something.
Trampoline.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, it's amazing to hear this now and being like, that's really not true. I'm curious to know what other myths about sleep have you sort of like unlocked in your career? Because I think that information is so important to disseminate, you know?
Yeah. So what you want to do is build up sleep pressure during the day. So all that activity during the day and getting out in the sunlight and the fresh air and the trampoline and running and swimming or snowboarding, whatever you're doing, you're building sleep pressure during the day. But other myths that I learned is like, I've heard, well, students who have autism or other disabilities will not be able to remediate their sleep issues. That's just how it is. Yeah. And that really isn't true. Also, if you put your child to sleep later, they'll wake up later. That's not true either. That has to be systematically done. Not just, if I put my kids to sleep an hour, you know, at 8 o'clock instead of 7 o'clock, they'll sleep an hour later. That doesn't happen.
Interesting.
All the things I did different with my own child.
It's so interesting though, because, you know, you think about these things and it's like, oh, I need to do this. I need to, you know, put them to bed earlier. But really the fact of the matter is that this isn't really true.
Right.
Like, it's wild.
Like, the body doesn't work like that.
Oh my goodness. No, it's really quite interesting to hear, but at the same time, I'm so glad that we're having this conversation because, you know, again, like I think a lot about even like my own sleep issues. I'm, like I said, I'm somebody who does have sleep apnea. I tend to mouth breathe a lot and I end up snoring as a result. And you would think, like in my case too, I also tend to try to go to bed a little earlier. However, I end up doom scrolling on my phone and then end up going to bed at like 11 o'clock at night, only to be woken up at like 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning with my dogs needing to eat and go potty. So it's like a whole other thing where it's like you would think that changing the timing and and having some sort of like activity would really be effective, but that really does not seem to be the case at all.
Right. And it was very eye-opening.
I can only imagine. I can only imagine. And, you know, you also mentioned medication, which, you know, I want to put a disclaimer out there. This is not medical advice at all. But, you know, I know personally, like I've taken sleep medication. And I know sometimes some of them can really do a number on your body. You know, I remember taking a specific sleeping medication and just ended up sleeping way too long because of the side effects, you know? And so again, I'm going to say this again, this is not medical advice. I do not want this to be advice, but definitely something that I've noticed is that medication too. So it's really interesting how medication can play a big role in sleep as well.
So, sleep sedatives, we would call a sleep stealer. So if you're on a sleep sedative, you're not hitting all the phases of sleep. So when you're sleeping, your body goes through sleep phases. So it'll be dark, deep sleep, light. I'm doing this backwards, but deep sleep, light sleep, deep, and you go in and out through each phases, and you go through REM sleep, you go through light sleep, and so forth. If you are taking a sedative, which I have myself, and I was blown away at this part, this section of the training, you're not hitting those sleep stages. It's just a straight line of sedated sleep. So you're not hitting all the phases that you should be within the sleep cycle. And one of those being is being melatonin. So your body produces its own melatonin. It's a hormone that your body produces itself. If you take melatonin, it's considered a sedative. And it's also not FDA approved pill by pill or gummy by gummy. So, yeah, I didn't know this either. Like, my daughter was on melatonin for a long time after a concussion. It should only be used for a few days at a time to reset. But melatonin, let's say gummies, you buy them on the shelf and it says 5 milligrams. Of course, they're FDA approved, but not gummy by gummy. So one gummy might have 4 milligrams, one might have 5, one might have 6. The only way to have it 100% accurate is if you get it through a prescription.
Interesting. That is so, you know, you don't think about that. You don't think about that when you like go and do that. Like, you know, because I'll ask like caregivers, you know, what medication is your child taking? And I didn't realize that when it comes to things like melatonin, you know, one might have like a different dosage than the other. Like, you would assume every single dosage is the same. Every single pill is the same. Every single gummy is the same. Every single pill or gummy is FDA approved. Like, you don't think about that. You just sort of assume, oh, hey, this is fine because it's FDA approved according to the bottle, right? You know? So.
Right. I didn't know that either. It's fascinating.
Pretty interesting to say the least. Pretty interesting. You know, and that being said, kind of on the note of medication, how do you adjust your approach to sleep interventions when medication does play a role?
So, meaning like if a student is on a stimulant or a calming medication?
Yeah, like let's say you have a student, let's just throw a case study out there. You know, let's say you have a student who's on a stimulant every single day. They have to have it. And how do you like approach a student that might be on a stimulant when working on a sleep intervention for them?
So this is where we involve the doctor. And we change with the doctor, we change sleep times and also dosage and what time the student is getting that prescription. So if I have a 19-year-old who is on a stimulant and was staying up till 1 o'clock in the morning. I mean, technically by age, because your sleep needs change by age, he should be sleeping 7 or 8 hours a night. We had to move back his sleep time and his time of getting his stimulant in the morning or during the day at school, with backtracking his sleep time, bedtime as well. And we do everything in 15-minute increments.
Okay. That's interesting. That's interesting. So you sort of like adjust it, you know, depending on like the 15-minute mark, basically,
right,
based on that. Okay. That's really interesting. What about a student who doesn't take any medication? Medication or medical has been ruled out completely. You know, the child doesn't need any sort of medication. You're just now going right into the behavioral sleep.
Okay. So what we look at is, you know, what exactly is the problem? So is it sleep latency? Is it their body just can't calm down? Like, you have those kids that are always revving to go and always on the move. Are they waking up during the night, or are they waking up too early? Or is it transitions or separation? So let's take separation, for example. They don't want to separate from their parents. This is one of the situations where we would build that up during the day, and we would do like quiet visiting in their bedroom or in their sleep area. So during the day, we'll have the parents in the child's bedroom or sleep area, with them playing with the toy. Billy, I'm running to the bathroom. I'll be right back. So the child knows I'm leaving and I'll be right back. And we build that up all through the day, not expecting, you know, that we're not going to come back. Because if you think about it, like, we put kids to sleep. I did this with my own kid. I put my kid to sleep in a dark, cold room by herself and, like, walked out and thought that was okay. You know, that comes with a lot of anxiety. So we have to make it that their sleep area is comfortable, it's soothing, and parents or caregivers are there. They leave and come back throughout the day. And that builds up more trust when they're separating to go to sleep. And then once they're, we'll go through the whole, we'll implement a bedtime routine that could be an hour to an hour and a half long. And that incorporates many things. And then when it's transition time for sleep, once your child is, you know, when you're in that, like, I'm almost asleep, not really, but I'm about to fall asleep, that's when we have the parents separate. So then they just go to sleep. They're not wide awake. They're just about to fall asleep. And we practice like that. And then it turns into good night. And
there they are. Okay. You know, it's so interesting too to hear, like, at that point, you know, not quite when they are, like, you know, like you're not just saying like good night, leaving them, whatever, you know, it's, you're gradually kind of like moving out when they're starting to fall asleep,
right,
as opposed to when they are asleep, you know, like that's really quite an interesting thing to me. And, you know, as a behavior analyst, we look at, you know, we call it manipulating our environments, or yes, manipulating the MO, you know, looking at environmental factors like light, like noises, like bedtime routines, even something as simple as like placement of furniture, placement of toys. How do you feel that they impact sleep?
Okay, so that's a great question, because that is all impacted. Every single thing that you said. So the only scientific backed up noise for sleeping is white noise, a white noise machine, white noise, because the frequency never changes. So if you think about it, if you're going to sleep with music, or you're going to sleep with the TV on, there are different changes. Like I used to recommend, I'm going to say the Calm app, but an app like that, and there'll be, you know, forest sounds or waves, and then all of a sudden a bird will chirp. I didn't realize that would disrupt someone's sleep, because it's not the same consistent noise. Or if you yourself, me, I used to fall asleep with the TV on And then all of a sudden a commercial would come on and it's like different voices and volume and things like that. So TV and music, calming music can be a part of bedtime routine, but not part of the cueing your body to sleep. And then as far as lighting, we have many kids who want to sleep with the light on. We recommend that you keep the light on, because if they do wake up during the night and if they fell asleep with the light on and wake up in the dark, they're going to be startled and not be able to put themselves back to sleep. So just keep the light on or keep the light off.
That's actually a really, really good point. You know, you said about the light, you know, keep it on. They fall asleep with the light on, keep it on. But if you turn it off, it turns into them being like startled or even scared. And, you know, a lot of our clients, I imagine, are afraid of the dark. You know, mm-hmm. There's this fear behind it. And so I could definitely imagine where, you know, a client might fall asleep, let's say, with the light on. The light ends up turning off in the middle of the night, or parents just turn it off, and then their body almost goes into like fight or flight mode, you know?
Right. Or if they have a middle of the night awakening and that's not how they fell asleep, you know, they fell asleep with the light on, and then for to be able to wake up and then soothe yourself back to sleep, the environment's different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's why. Yeah, that's why environmental manipulations really do matter. You know, that's why we have to set our clients up for success with that. It's so interesting to hear that too. And also with the white noise, I personally fall asleep to YouTube videos, which is probably not the healthiest thing to fall asleep to, if I'm being honest. But I find myself doing that just because it's something that I'm used to. But then I realize too, you know, now that I've like kind of reflected a little bit, you do wake up to different noises. You do wake up to different frequencies, different sounds, different people when you're listening to a YouTube video. So, you know, it's quite interesting to hear a little bit about this and sort of like reflect on the fact that, you know, there's going to be different things that you're going to wake up to.
Right. Right. And sometimes you wake up in a startle, you know, if there's sometimes the commercials are louder than, you know, what you were originally listening to also. And like I said, I used to fall asleep to the comm app, or I'm not blaming comm app, but I'm saying like an app like that. And then a bird will chirp and, you know, that'll startle me, and that didn't work. So white noise is the way to go. And also too, for those people who fall asleep with the TV on and they sleep through the night, or they fall asleep with some kind of app and they sleep through the night, then it's not a problem. Like we always say, it's only a problem if it's a problem.
Absolutely. Right. Absolutely.
So if you get a great night's sleep with the TV on, perfect.
Yeah, I know personally I've done that before. And I think what I have found is it's kind of like you, where it's like, you know, it might be a commercial, or might be like, for me, I think it's like the light that comes into my eyes almost, where the screen when I fall asleep might look a certain way. But then as like my eyes sort of like shift a little bit, it's almost like the screen turns into a different color or a different, right. Different brightness level. So right. I could see that.
Right. So you want to be consistent.
Yeah. I mean, consistency matters. Consistency really matters. Oh my goodness. No, that's really such a beautiful point. I'm so happy because like, you know, it does make me really think about like the way that I'm sleeping too, you know, even like just from my perspective of everything that I've told you, it's like there are little things and, you know, and it might be that we might sleep really great with what we're doing, but then think about some of the other things too. Think about things like the consistency with the environment, the noises, the lights, all of that.
Right. And of course there are, you know, the blue light issues. You know, our TVs now are LED TVs, so they do have blue light. So we recommend that if you're watching TV to calm down before you fall asleep, that your TV is like 12 feet away from your head. And then of course we try the best we can to give up screens at least an hour and a half before bed. Unless I have students that rely on their cell phones or their iPads as communication devices. So we'll never have them give that up. We'll do other things, like on an iPhone, there's a nightshade button in the settings. So you could change it to nightshade. And then also we'll get a blue light screen cover. So it's not perfect, but you know, when you outweigh the blue light issue and communication is going to win every time. So we just try and dim the light as much as possible.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's really so interesting to even just like think about that and think about like how we can help our learners with those sleep issues as well, you know, and look at things like even from an AAC device. I have some students who have used AAC devices and they do rely on that to communicate their wants and needs. And so, you know, I wouldn't have ever thought about things like the nightshade and thinking about like how we can like reduce the light on their end, but also still be able to have access to the device when they need access to that device.
Right.
I love it. Well, I want to go ahead and start out with our first code word. That first code word is routines. That is routines. That is routines. All right. Let's talk a little bit about sleep assessment. So walk us through with what a sleep assessment might look like. I imagine it's different for everybody, but I'm curious to know like what might a quote unquote typical sleep assessment looks like for a client of yours.
Sure. So we'll do a lot of background information. So what does your sleep and bedtime routine look like? And we'll assess are there things that are, you know, physically provoking or calming? We look at what timing they go to sleep, how many hours are you expecting your child to sleep? Because like I said, sleep shifts, the amount of sleep that you need shifts. We look at what they're going to sleep with. Like I said, the phone or what their sleep space looks like, sleep latency. You know, how long is it taking them to fall asleep? You should really be falling asleep in 5 to 15 minutes, not 2 hours. What time are they waking up in the morning? And also, you know, where are the siblings? Where are the issues? Are they waking up during the night? Are they not, you know, giving you a hard time to go to sleep? What does, I worked with, one of my favorite cases is I worked with twins. Five-year-old autistic twins that they were waking up in the middle of the night playing. Cutest thing. Mom and dad didn't think it was cute, but I thought it was adorable. And they were playing with each other and playing, you know, that was their issue. So we, mom and dad, put cameras in their room and we were able to see what time they woke up, what toys they went to, who woke up first, and what did that look like? So it's a lot of like background information and a lot on the timings and, you know, medication, things like that.
Interesting. With the twins that you had, was there like a consistent pattern that you saw?
Yes. One always woke up the other.
Really?
Yes. It was the same one that Aiden would always wake up Christian. And then Christian would, you know, and then they would play it, laugh and giggle. Like they were having a grand old time.
Oh my goodness. Oh yeah. My goodness.
So what we found was Aiden was falling asleep on the bus. So that was a sleep stealer. He was falling asleep on the bus and it had a lengthy bus ride home. I think it was a 45-minute bus ride home. And that led to middle of the night awakenings. So once we got rid of that nap time, it was much easier and removed the toys. That was much easier to get him to sleep through the night. And I didn't think it was going to be that easy, but it really was that easy. It was like we call it the unicorn case.
I could definitely see that. How were you able to take away that sleep stealer in that case? You know, he mentioned that he fell asleep on the bus because of his lengthy bus ride. What did you have to do to ultimately like take away that sleep stealer?
So in this particular case, going to school, he was on a smaller bus that had a driver's assistant. So many of our students have driver's assistants, and the driver and the driver's assistant thought like, oh, you know, he's tired, let him sleep, it's okay. You know, the poor kid's tired. He's only 6 years old. We gave her things to keep him awake, like we sent him books and little toys and fidget items to keep him, you know, and she kept him engaged until he got out of the routine of sleeping. You know, she would
Wow.
sing songs with him and, you know, head, shoulders,
How
knees, and toes kind of thing.
I love that. I love that. How long did it take you guys to kind of like get, I guess for lack of better term, get rid of the sleep stealer?
I'm going to say to fully get rid of it and keep him awake, it was a good 4 weeks because he was
Okay.
exhausted. You know, at the end, it was the end of the day, 4 weeks.
Wow,
I mean, some
that's
of our plans take months and, you know, it's slow and steady.
yeah, I was gonna say too. I mean, usually interventions can take anywhere from just like a few weeks to a few months or you know, how or years, you know, depending
Yeah.
on the level of intensity and all of that too. I know that like with that twin, you know, it took really just getting rid of that sleep stealer. Now with the other twin, because you know, the other one was waking up. Was the twin really the biggest sleep stealer, or were there any other components that you had to look at with the other twin?
The other twin slept right through once he wasn't being woken up with toys.
Wow, that's
Yeah.
insane. That's
That's
so
why we call it the
insane.
unicorn case because it just like textbook was so successful.
Oh my goodness.
And I
I feel
can't say
like
they all go like that. Like you just said, sometimes it's very difficult and it takes several months and a lot of hard work on the parents.
Yeah, I was gonna say, tell us about a time where it was maybe a little bit more difficult where, you know, you had to try multiple things or you had to really like, you know, have sort of a hard conversation with parents. Because I know sometimes one of the things that we deal with as BCBAs is parent training. And sometimes having that conversation of like, I need you to be consistent with it is very, very tough. So I'm curious to know what was like your most challenging case study that you've had.
The most challenging case study I had that I still have because he does still have some regression here and there is he this is my 19-year-old waking up at 4 in the morning and staying awake and then falling asleep when he got to school. He's sleeping for 2 hours in the morning. Mom not knowing also he sleeps between dad's house and mom's house, so the consistency is not always there. And as much as they try to keep it consistent, there are variations. I mean, they're two different houses. So this one is an ongoing case, and there is some regression, but we did have many visits with the doctor and changing medication. What I got mom to do was get a Ring camera, because she's exhausted. I mean, exhausted up at 4 in the morning, has a full-time job. Let's get a Ring camera. I think it was a Ring camera or some kind of camera that she could watch and see what time he got up and what he did, because she would wake up and find him on the couch watching TV, you know, when she woke up in the morning. She wouldn't always hear him wake up because he would just, you know, get up and help himself to a snack and go onto the couch and turn on his favorite show. And it was hard to get her to wake up, time it, take data. You know, that's hard when you're exhausted working a full-time job. So we incorporated the camera, which was a big help and a lot of support. I know this is, you know, I know this is tough, but this is what the outcome is going to be. And let's look at he woke up 7 out of 7 days between 4 and 4:30 in the morning. So we got to do some adjustments there. And
Wow.
that, yeah.
What ended up being like the sleep stealers that you discovered with him, just out of curiosity?
So the napping at school. So he would come right off the bus, get into a seat, and he was sleep. He also has sleep apnea too, which he wears the mask, but at some time during the night it's off and he goes into the couch onto the couch. The biggest sleep stealer was falling asleep in school. So we had to redo his whole morning schedule. So he was up and active for the first 2 hours. So there's no sit down and do work at a desk or a table or a seat. We created jobs around the building. We went for a walk on the track. He does the mailing in the main office. Just different tasks, even if it was something fun. He loves Legos. He's like a Lego master. Just practice being awake, give him a 1,000-piece Lego thing. Like we're practicing awake time now. It's enjoyable. He likes doing the mailing, even though it's a task. So that's where we're at with him, getting rid of that.
That's really interesting to hear, and kind of see, like, again, it takes that consistency to really make sure that, we're finding those sleep stealers, we're finding the ways that we can really work together. And also too, it just sounds like a lot of care coordination. I mean,
Yes.
sounds like that care coordination really has to be like fully present. Out of curiosity too, because kind of going into care coordination, which is another really big area that as a behavior analyst, we're required to do. How often are you finding yourself meeting with like other teams, like doctors, and also like in your most recent case, I would imagine probably the school as well.
So in it depends on the severity of the case. This particular student has team meetings every 6 weeks. And his psychiatrist, and the person who prescribes the medication, he goes to every 2 weeks. So we email the doctor data, and I will either jump on the call when he's in the office. The doctor will include me in on the call, or I've actually gone to the office with the family. Like I said, I've been very lucky that way, where the doctors are very inclusive, or they'll jump on a Zoom meeting during the day. Again, I'm very lucky in the school district that I work with. We have 292 autistic students
Wow.
in the district, and this is a school district in New York. There are 10,000 students in the district in total, but we have a very large autism population and program. So
Wow.
it's set up very systematic. Depending on the severity of and what program they're in, you're set up for team meetings. You have child-specific parent training. You have group parent training. So there's a lot of communication.
Wow. I can only imagine, and I imagine the importance of it too. I mean, especially because you are having to meet with these people, you're having to kind of figure out, okay, like how can we best support the client? How can we best support the child? What can we do differently? How can we best, for example, change the morning routine or change the afternoon routine or change things like with the bus ride with your student, It's really kind of a beautiful thing to even like see that care coordination play out. 'Cause I mean, consider yourself very lucky because not a lot of people have that level of coordination.
I know I'm very fortunate, and that's why, I get the outcomes that we do as a team, because I'm very fortunate that way.
That is so awesome. That is so
So
awesome.
we call it, like, when I was in the program, we would have to do case studies and report on the case studies, and mine was always like the classroom model. They're like, okay, here's Lisa with the classroom model, because it was just always set up so great. But there are definitely challenges. Like I said, that one student has a lot of regression, and we have to take a lot of, and we've been working on this for a year. you know, and there are regressions in there and we have to restart, or somebody gets sick, or, you know, they're on vacation and we got to start over, or, you know, time changes. Daylight saving time changes always messes it up. So we start a week before doing 15-minute increments for daylight saving time.
Yeah, I was going to ask you a little bit about, like, random outliers. You know, one of the ones I think about is, like, the flu. You know, if someone gets really sick with the flu, or someone gets just really sick with, like, COVID-19, or, you know, something along those lines. How do you address sleep interventions, one, when they're sick, but also, two, after they're done getting over their sickness?
Right. So that, again, looks at timing. There's probably a lot of sleep because their body needs to regenerate. Yeah. And you have to just really throw the scheduling out the window, because in order to get better and healthier, you need to sleep. And then we'll start, what time are they naturally falling asleep after that? And then we'll either build forward or backward of when their bedtime routine did start. And the same thing with the holidays. You know, we want the holidays to be enjoyable and fun, and this is going to be, you know, a memory. So we're going to be looser on the bedtime routines and family being over. And, you know, we call it jet lag. There's going to be jet lag issues because the timing is so off. So we do the best we can, enjoy it, and then start in the small increments again. So if the whole holiday break in December, they weren't going to bed until 10 or 11 at night, but they're usually going to sleep at 9, we're going to do that 15-minute increment backwards again until we get to back to the start. So that could take weeks. But it was worth it because we had family time.
Wow. That is really... That's really so interesting to hear. You know, I really appreciate you explaining this, and, you know, especially because, you know, a lot of our clients might have those outliers too, you know, thinking a lot about, like, school breaks, thinking a lot about, you know, that's definitely something that I'm really, really considering, as well as, like, I'm thinking of, like, vacations, or even, like, a family who goes across the country and the time zones change.
Right.
That's a big thing I think about too.
Right.
So, yeah, that's pretty.
And if going on vacation too. So I'm going to bring it back to the 19-year-old that I keep bringing back because I work with him the most with sleep, and it's been a year. He traveled cross country over the summer, and mom brought the entire bedtime routine with her and kept it consistent. So he loves animals. So part of his bedtime routine is, like, reading books about animals, puzzles, crossword puzzles, but everything you can think of animals, and brought everything with her. So it was the same setup. You know, first came the puzzle, and then came the book, and then came the crossword puzzle. And there was some similarity in there, even though there was vacation and time difference.
Interesting. That's so interesting to hear, you know, especially just knowing, like, especially knowing there are things like vacations that we have to look at, and, you know, just different areas like that. So very, very interesting. Let's talk a little bit about goals, you know. So I know that as behavior analysts, we come up with goals, and, you know, we always want to make sure that we're individualizing them. In your case, kind of tell me a little bit about, like, what a goal might look like for a client of yours. Of course, I know it's all going to vary, but I'm just so curious to know.
Right. So goals, I'll give you some goals that you wouldn't think of. Relinquishing an item, you know, before bedtime. So that's a goal that we want to work on during the day before bedtime. So relinquishing an item, following directions, transitions. So those are all prerequisite goals that, you know, we start with.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. So it takes, like, And these are goals that as a BCBA, like I've written for some of my clients, you know, it's kind of interesting how the two kind of like overlap with each other, relinquishing, tolerating, delayed, denied access.
Right.
You know, I realize now that I'm like thinking about it, I can see how and why they can be super relevant to sleep.
Right. Because the only time you're taking the cell phone away, if it's at bedtime, that's not, you know, the goal that we want. We want to be able to relinquish the cell phone or, you know, tablet many times during the day. So it's not just at bedtime where it's paired with something aversive.
Interesting. Interesting. You know, that's actually just, again, like, I love the fact that we're talking about like these types of goals because of the fact that they are super relevant to what we do as behavior analysts. And in a way, like we're generalizing this over to, you know, different conditions, different settings, different circumstances, different people, you know? So again, I'm really kind of blown away to hear this too.
Yeah, it's like I said, this program just opened the floodgates and I just ran with it.
Oh, that's so cool. That is so cool. Oh my goodness. Any common patterns or recurring issues you've noticed when working with clients on sleep? Like, you know, I know you mentioned sleep stealers a little earlier, being a major player in the game. But that being said, like, have you noticed any sort of like common theme, at least amongst the clients you've worked with?
So a common theme, and I feel like I say this all the time, and it sounds so repetitive, but a common theme is a bedtime routine. A bedtime routine that's at least an hour long and an hour and a half long. And it could start with dinner, and then that goes to a bath, and then that goes to pajamas, and then other hygiene issues, and then that goes to, you know, a matching game, playing something calm, puzzles, coloring, things like that, to just really set up the body for I'm calming, I'm cueing my body that it's time to go to sleep. So that is the biggest thing I work on.
Interesting, interesting. And obviously bedtime routines look very different for everybody, you know.
Right.
But that being said, you know, it's really kind of interesting to see that be like a common theme amongst, you know, all of your clients.
So I have clients that I work with a wide range of clients, and I have clients that I transitioned to college. Mm-hmm. And when I just recently started reaching out, you know, I'll keep in touch. How's it going? How you doing? How's the dorm? Just little check-ins. And then I was like, hey, how are you sleeping? And they're not sleeping. So I just started this whole crusade on I'm going to get these college kids to go to sleep. So that's a whole nother podcast, but they don't have bedtime routines and they're embarrassed to have a bedtime routine. I'm like, we are going to normalize bedtime routines in college. Yeah. So that's what I've been working on with them.
Oh my goodness. You know, it's so interesting how a bedtime routine can truly make a big difference in just the day-to-day life. It really is. So you wouldn't think about this, especially like as someone in college or as some, like as an adult even, like, you know, I really, even like reflecting on some of like what I've tried or what I've done, like I don't really have a full-blown bedtime routine. And so that being said, it's like, for me, I just grab my dogs and go to bed and that's it. Like that might be a routine, but still it's like, it's not as structured as, you know, say like you're going to take a bath, brush your teeth, you know, all the other things.
And do enjoyable, relaxing things. It doesn't have to be a daunting task. Like I like those adult coloring books, like those little meditative yoga coloring books. I like to do those at night, or just, you know, reading always puts me to sleep for some reason. I don't know why. I'm a concert goer. I love concerts. And I always go back to this. I went to a concert on a work night, and I got back home at let's say 12:30. I was at Madison Square Garden with a lot of noise, a lot of lights, tens of thousands of people, went back home, and my body was still like trembling. Even though it was over, my ears were ringing. I was trembling. I was overstimulated. I didn't sleep at all. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to go to bed now. And I go to lay in bed, and like my body's still going to the beat of whatever concert I just did. So I try and use that as an example. I had no transition time for my body to calm down. And that's what it's like for our kids who are on the go, and they have those high motor energy kids that, you know, are hard to calm down.
Yeah. You know, it's so interesting. I'm somebody who likes to go to drag shows, and, you know, drag shows are very similar to concerts in the sense that there's a lot of lights, a lot of noises, a lot of like, you know,
a lot of fun.
Yeah. In general, so much fun. But yeah, you know, that being said, I can definitely imagine where it's like, you know, all of that can really make you still so very stimulated. I even remember the last drag show that I went to, I think I was up for at least a couple more hours after I came back home, because it was like, oh my gosh, this was so exciting. And now it's like, okay, I really need to go back to sleep. I need to like calm myself down. So interesting. Ugh.
Yeah, and your body won't do it.
Yeah, your body's too excited. Your body has too much adrenaline. Mm-hmm. I know, like, personally, my body was just like the last show that I went to, I went up to Jacksonville with one of my best friends, and, you know, we, and just for you guys, just in case you guys don't know, I live in Orlando, so living in Orlando, driving 2 hours to Jacksonville, going to a show, driving 2 hours back to Orlando, like, that adrenaline is just pumping and keeping going, and, you know, even with the drive back home, which is a 2-hour drive, the adrenaline was still pumping from that, you know, right. And it's amazing. It's amazing to kind of see the difference in the routine too.
Right. So that's where the bedtime routines come in. I mean, of course, you know, our two situations that we're using as examples aren't something that happened every night, but for those students that can't self-regulate, that's what it's like. So we have to build that up. I'm saying it backwards. We're not building up anything. We're building up the sleep pressure, actually. We're building up sleep pressure during the day and calming their body, cueing their body. Oh, you know what? I'm taking a bath. I'm putting my pajamas on. I'm cueing my body. It's almost getting ready to go to sleep.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and that being said too, one of the things that I've heard a lot about, I'm really interested to get your hot take on this, the cry it out method. What is your take on it? Tell us, like, you know, not only what your take is on it, but if you were to recommend any alternatives, what would you recommend?
Being that I'm a certified behavioral sleep specialist, that's my only recommendation. The cry it out method, you know, we all learn compassion now, you know, compassion training and compassion, you know, for our clients. And I mean, I have a 20-year-old. I didn't know at the time I did the Ferber method, and I let her scream it out until she finally fell asleep. I didn't know any better, you know, at the time. To do it again, knowing all the knowledge that I have, I would have approached it a behavioral way. And I'm not saying that's not good for everyone. That's just my approach is compassion.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I've heard a lot about like the cry it out method, and, you know, I've definitely, I could definitely see like why people do it, but then bringing in that self of like that sense of compassion, you know, that's something that we all really need. We all need a little bit of that compassion. Be able to give that compassion is just so vital for our students.
Right. And especially for our nonverbal learners. I mean, we don't really know what the precipitating factors are.
Yeah.
You know, and we have to assume, you know, there and be compassionate. You know, we're trauma-informed now. So it's not like, you know, 1990 ABA, we're trauma-informed now. And we do handle our clients with compassion.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What would be a more compassionate way to go about this? Like, I know the crying out method is something that has been used before, but what would be something that is more like compassionate from your approach?
What would be more compassionate?
Yeah, like what would you say is a more compassionate way to address sleep, I guess, if that makes more sense?
So I'm going to go back to the bedtime routine again and the prerequisite skills. So making sure that those prerequisite skills are there and they're mastered skills, and then incorporate them into the bedtime routine where it can be enjoyable. It doesn't have to be daunting. It doesn't have to be aversive. This is my time where I get my favorite coloring book and I get my favorite animal story and I get time with mom and dad and, or whoever the caregiver is. And I have my blankie and I have my weighted blanket and, you know, I'm comfortable. And again, with the prerequisite mastered skills already. So I think like, all right, I'm going to incorporate meditation into my bedtime routine. Meditation, guided meditation, irritates me. So that's not a good, bedtime is not a good time to pick out a meditation for me because I'm getting irritated. During the day, I'm going to find a guided meditation that I like and I could tolerate the person's voice. And it's soothing to me. So I'm going to do that during the day and I get irritated at night. So those are, I mean, that's like an adult my kind of example, but there are no surprises. Everything is a mastered skill and an enjoyable skill.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and I ask about like what a more compassionate way would be so that way our listeners can really understand, like, you know, there are other ways to address sleep rather than just hope that they stop crying and fall asleep. Because that really,
right. We're working on these skills all day long.
Exactly. You know, we want to make sure that we're being as open-minded and as compassionate and really trying to help get to the root of the problem, especially for our learners who aren't able to vocalize how they're feeling, what's going on inside, whether they use, you know, speech generated device or, you know, gestures to communicate, hey, this is what's going on with me. You know, practice compassion first. Practice compassion first.
Right.
So I love it. Well, I'm going to go ahead and drop our second code word. And that second code word is calming. That is CALMING. That is the word calming. I got a couple more questions I'd love to ask. Let's say if someone is struggling with sleep, what would you say is one small change that they can try today to start seeing improvements?
So let's look at how much sleep you need. You know, are you expecting yourself or your child or your learner to sleep 10 hours on the weekends because you want to sleep in? Like that's not really realistic. You know, you got to look at the ages. Like, of course, the younger students, younger people want to or need to sleep more. As you get older, your sleep shifts and your body requires 8 hours, you know, 7 to 8 hours of sleep, sometimes 9 hours, depending on your body. So just know the amount of sleep that you need, know that it's comfortable. Cool temperature is definitely helps if you just bring the temperature down a little bit while you sleep. Did I answer your question?
I think you did. Yeah, of course. I think that really makes sense. I mean, I'm someone who likes to sleep in the cold. I would even joke as to say the Arctic tundra. I don't know. Like for me, I'm not a hot sleeper. And so that's actually a really good tip, is to bring down the temperature a little bit. Now, I know people who don't like the Arctic tundra, but that's just me. That's helped me be able to sleep, you know.
And that's one of the recommended things, a cooler temperature. And you want to build up your sleep pressure during the day. So stay active, get some fresh air. All during the day, Don't go to the gym at 9 at night.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I could definitely understand why on that, especially if it's like that is a sleep stealer for you, kind of like what you were saying. So
yeah.
I love it. Well, thank you so much, Lisa. I'm really happy that we have the chance to talk tonight. I would love to have you drop a little bit about like where we can learn more about your work or get support if they're facing any sleep challenges.
Sure. I'm on Instagram and my tag is icansleep-lisa. And I also have a website, LV Behavior Consulting. And that's where you can find me. And next week I'm going to be starting blogs on my website. So you can get many different articles. I'm going to link articles and new sleep. I'm continually learning about sleep. So I'm just going to provide it as much as possible. And I try and provide as many tips as I can on Instagram as well. And you could reach out to me there. I'm always willing to help. My college students that I'm working with is on a volunteer basis. I'm working with 6 students because I just want to and help.
I love that. So by the time this episode releases, you'll have had at least a blog out there. So definitely check out her blog. Definitely check out her website. This was a really great episode. I'm so happy that we got to talk a little bit tonight. So thank you, Lisa, for coming on today. I really appreciate your time and your willingness to talk to me all about sleep.
Thank you so much for having me. It was so great talking to you. I loved it.
Thank you so much, Lisa. And thank you, everybody. I have been your host, Michelle. Tune in to another episode of Safe Space, the ABA podcast, here in the future. Bye, everyone.